Hello, I'm Howard and welcome to the 9320 podcast and a special one-off show as we mark the release of Triumphs, Treachery and Toilet Rolls, the autobiography of none other than Francis Lee. By speaking to its author, stroke co-author, Bill Bradshaw. Good morning, Bill. How are you?
Yes, good morning, Howard. I'm fine, thank you. And yeah, definitely co-author. It's not my book, it's Francis. I just like sort of inky crafts to it, but it's Franny's story.
Yeah, I didn't know how to do that, so I was about to ask anyway. So thank you. First of all, thanks for taking the time out to speak to me today. Really appreciate it. The book was out on Monday. How's your week been so far?
To be honest, it's been terrific because there has been a lot of interest, and it's been great. I mean, obviously, the main event, if you like, and it was a nice event, was the launch at Bramall. I went down from my place in County Durham to Bramall, which I've got to know quite well, that area, obviously, because it's just a hop, skip and a jump away from where Franny lived in Wilmslow. And we had the launch for the book, which was officially published, as you say, on Monday. Saturday was its preview launch, if you like, at Simply Books. And the whole gang were there, from virtually the whole gang from the Lee family, and many friends and people who'd already come in to buy the book were in the audience, and the place was jam-packed, which was lovely to see. And I was joined by Mike Summerby, who kindly wrote the foreword to the book for me, and of course he was a huge pal, a massive pal of Franny's, and also Franny's second son Johnny Lee was on the platform, if you like, to take questions as well. And it was great to have him there. And the three of us got stuck in. It was chaired by James Cooper of Sky Sports in the region. Mm. And we had a really good time. And I think everybody in the audience did too.
Yeah. Well, I've read the book. I've devoured it over the last few days. Oh, and absolutely love it. But we'll obviously get to... So not too many finer details. I did an interview on Sir O'Brien Horton for his autobiography, and I think I dissected it so much that he said at the end, half jokingly, half serious, no one needs to buy the book now. You've gone through it so much. So I learned an important lesson that day about, don't have to go through everything in the book, of course, because that's for people to read and obviously, take it in. But there are the odd thing, of course, that I'd love to discuss. But the first question I think that I'd be interested in is, how did the book actually come to be in the first place?
Yeah, good question. It was a bit of a surprise to me as well. It all went back to 2012. At the time, I was head of sports editor, if you like, of the Daily Express. Yeah. I was having a good old-fashioned Fleet Street lunch with a couple of pals, one of whom was a pal of Franny's, Chris Ronnie, who's quite a colourful Northwest businessman, many people will know him. And Chris said to me, "Do you know Francis Lee wants somebody to write his book?" I said, "No, I didn't." I said, "I'm sure it'll be a cracking book, but..." I said, "That's interesting." And he says, "Well, he wants you to write it." I said, "What?" You know, thinking that there are plenty of people, plenty of wordsmiths in Manchester to do just that sort of job. But he says, no, he says, "Somebody's pointed you out and he'd like to talk to you." Well, I'd have been a fool not to show some interest, because I already knew that Franny had a life that was well worth chewing the fat over. And that set the ball in rolling. I contacted Franny. And we started the process from there. It's quite a long time ago now, but as ever, these things have peaks and troughs. But we got together, back in 2012 to start the ball rolling anyway.
Was there a specific reason it's taken this long, or was that always the intention, that there was no rush for this to come out?
Well, this is where life takes over. We thought there was no rush, didn't we? But There are reasons. Of course, there are reasons. We started off at a decent crack, a decent pace, I would thought. But I was living in London at the time. And then, of course, Franny was in Wilmslow. So I would come up whenever I could and get the tape recorder going, sat in little Stanley Lands with Franny, and he'd get the glass out and a bottle of brandy or whatever, and throw cigars in my direction, which used to embarrass me because I was very much an amateur cigar smoker compared to Granny.
Join the club,
We'd get a lot of stuff done, and then he'd say, come and join us in Portugal. I love Portugal. I spent some time there, so you won't find me here very often now. I'm off to Portugal for a while. So I would go out to Portugal where they had this lovely holiday home, do the same sort of thing there, play around the golf. Well, Franny would play around the golf. I would hack my way around, and he would take the mickey. And it was fantastic. There came a point when, to be honest, I'll be frank about it, Franny lost a little bit of interest because he'd gone on to his latest entrepreneurial drive. And Franny was a driven man, and he was always thinking about new ways to do a deal or do something interesting. And he had this idea for a sort of an appliance that would go into every new build house of a certain standard, a bit like, you know, maybe a microwave or a fridge. This case, it was something called an Enviromatic, which was basically something that would eat up waste metal, cans, tins, that sort of thing in kitchens. And you'd then take the ingot that it's created through this compression process to somewhere like a supermarket where you'd get cash in return. A little bit like the way that we take our batteries into supermarkets these days. And he got his sort of ducks in a row with this to a certain extent, but couldn't quite get it over the line. So that got in the way a bit. And then his CBE came along, which was great. And then, of course, ultimately he got poorly. And you know what happened then, but in the book was more than 7/8 done. So last October, when Franny passed away, I got back in touch with Jill and just said, look, we've got this great story. I said, do you want me to finish it? I said, but one thing's for sure, I won't finish it. I won't put it out there unless you're happy for me to do so. And in fairness, Jill and her kids and Franny's family were terrific, and they said, "Yes, Bill, go ahead and do it." And so, from about late January, shortly after Christmas, anyway, onwards, it was pedal to the metal time, and it all came out of the bowels of my computer, all the transcribed notes, and then it had to be knocked into shape. And I also thought it would be a nice way to, because it is unusual having an autobiography coming out after the subject has died, I thought a nice way to bring the whole thing together would be to devote an epilogue at the end of the book to the family, to his nearest and dearest, and Jill and Franny's daughter Charlotte and the two boys, Nicky and Johnny, contributed a lovely epilogue, I think.
It's a wonderful way to finish the book, absolutely.
To bring the whole thing full circle. So that's how it came about and why it took so long.
Now cast your mind back to 2012. Do you remember, what did Franny give you a reason for why he wanted at that point in his life to do an autobiography?
Well, he didn't sort of alight upon one reason, Howard, but I think I know what it was from the various chats that we had. He did actually do a book years and years and years and years ago called Soccer Around the World, with Peter Keeling, who I'm sure many of your listeners will know of. Peter, former athlete and sports journalist in the Manchester and Bolton areas.
Yeah.
But that was when Franny was in his mid-20s. He'd not really done anything since then, so he had a whole raft of his life. And dare I say it, because I do say this, the reason why I wanted to do the book is because he didn't just live one extraordinary life. He had sort of four lives. Mm. He was this top-class, brilliant, unique international footballer, World Cup footballer, serial winner of medals with City. He then did it again at Derby. He then became, a racehorse trainer as well, and was pretty darn good at that. And all the while, well, virtually all the while he was playing, from about the age of 18 or 19 onwards, he had this second life. He was leading a dual life because, as he says right at the start of the book, you know, Franny Lee was Britain's first millionaire footballer. He says it wasn't George Best. It wasn't Kevin Keegan, not Alan Shearer or anybody like that. It was Franny Lee, me. I was the, and he doesn't say it in a boastful way, just a matter of fact. But of course, he didn't make, even in the days he was with City, he didn't make his big money playing football. While he was playing football, and this is the extraordinary thing, he was making fortunes from his burgeoning business in the paper industry. And it's an extraordinary life that he was leading then, you know, sort of training and playing every day for City, training in the mornings. But then as soon as he left the changing room when he was training, as Mike Summerbee details, even in the foreword, while the rest of them were thinking about, you know, going to the snooker club or going to the pub or going to play golf, Franny was putting on a three-piece suit and going off to do deals in the paper industry. It's an extraordinary thing. And all those things happened after Franny's first, small chronicle that he did back in 69-70. So that's why I think he thought, crikey, my life story's due an update. Yeah. And he hadn't really done it, since that first smaller effort years and years ago.
Something that really fascinates me, and I am jealous, to be honest. I'd love to be here, to have sat down with Francis Lee, and I could name about 1,000 other people and do an autobiography with them. What's the writing process like? Because when you read this book, cannot state this enough, you're definitely reading Francis Lee speaking. I mean, it just comes across on the pages. This is Franny Lee all over his opinions. And how easy was that for you to achieve with him when you sat down with him? What's the process? Was it just him dictating to you and you putting it into a structure, or is that how it works?
Well, thanks very much for saying that in the first place, Howard, because doing... We call me a few things at the beginning of this. Call me the ghost. If like, I am the ghost writer here.
Yeah.
So it's my job first and foremost to capture Franny's voice, and that is absolutely critical. And I could have written the finest prose in this book, but if it doesn't sound like Franny leaping off the page, then I've failed. To hear you say that is terrific. What helps is the fact that. In this era of dictaphones and things like that, what that entailed was Franny trying to get me drunk while the tapes were.
It's a tough life.
Not quite that, but he was very generous with his drink, and we would just while away the hours, and we'd just talk. I'd ask the questions. He'd answer them, and then he'd stop and he'd say, by the way, why don't you ask me this? Because he obviously had something in his mind he wanted to get out there, and so we'd go back and talk about something, and he sort of wanted to ask. It was up to me to try and prompt the conversation along, which was very easy with Franny, because he was quite loquacious. You know, he could talk for England as well as play for England. So that was that, and I always had in the back of my mind... I remember talking to the late, great Hugh McIlvany, one of the greatest sports writers who's ever lived.
Yeah.
And Hugh McIlvany had done, this must be going back 20, maybe more than 20 years, he'd done a great book with Alex Ferguson. And I remember reading that book that Hugh had ghosted for Alex. And I had the same reaction as you. I thought, this just sounds like Fergie. This is him. Mm. And I thought myself, same thing with Franny Lee. I've got to capture his voice. And I said this to the family. I said, do tell me if you think I've got it.
Yeah.
And they were very, I think, pleasantly surprised. So it is easier though when you, if I was sat down like people would do in the very old days and just be sat down with a sharpened pencil and a pad and trying to take time notes down. Everything that Franny said, it would have been a lot more difficult. Having a dictaphone and then being able to listen back at leisure, it's easy because you then capture exactly how Franny said things, his particular way of putting across his arguments and sentiments and emotions. And it was an absolute pleasure to be taken inside his, his inner sanctum that was standing around in Portugal. And I hope I have captured it. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's very forthright in the book, as you would expect from Franny. How did you both approach the balance, or how did he approach the balance between honesty and not wanting to offend was he happy to offend, or was it a conversation you had? Because he's very honest about people, you know, in his career, both careers, of people he's not happy with or think might have failed, and honest about himself as well. So was that an issue, or did he always want to just, like, I'm going to be honest, and you can, did he ever, like, pull you back and say, don't put this in or this in or anything else?
Thanks for listening to the first 15 minutes of the show. To listen to the full podcast and all our content, including reviews, previews, analysis, quizzes, and much more, go to 9320.com to sign up now, or simply click the link in the description. So what are you waiting for? Go to 9320.com now for the best, most passionate, impartial coverage of Manchester City and beyond.